At 7:10 a.m., a customer support dashboard came alive while the office lights stayed dark. Tickets moved, chats opened, and a parent on the school run answered two quick questions from a phone in the parking lot. 2 hours later, the same parent paused for a parent-teacher meeting, then picked work up again at 11 sharp. By mid-afternoon, a teammate took the handoff from a quiet home office 30 miles away. The team's manager checked outcomes, not badges. Numbers were steady. People were calmer. The idea sounded simple. Give adults control of time, name a small block of core hours, and measure the work by what gets delivered. In practice, it challenged habits that felt like rules. Who covers lunch? Who gets meetings at 6 in the evening? Who always says yes? This series follows one pilot from first memo to measurable results. The question is plain. Can a workplace be both flexible and reliable without slipping into chaos or burnout? Chapter 1. The pilot that changed the morning. The first email went out at 8:30 a.m., March 3rd, in a short, careful tone. Human resources set the frame. The company would run a 12-week pilot offering flexible hours and remote options for specific teams. Each team would define two things: core hours when people were reachable, and outcomes that mattered more than time seen. Managers would keep service levels and quality within target. Employees would document their schedules and share coverage plans. The support team that volunteered served a global set of customers. Mornings were heavy. Evenings were light but unpredictable. The manager, a calm voice with a habit of writing notes in clear bullet lines, set core hours at 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday to Friday. Outside those 4 hours, people would choose their blocks. The team would run a shared calendar with visible availability. The rule was simple. Keep at least 2 people on real-time channels during open hours. Agree handoffs in writing. 2 workers stepped forward as early testers. One was a caregiver with a grade school pickup at 2:30 p.m. The other was a long-distance commuter who spent 2 hours each day in traffic. They each proposed split shifts. The caregiver would work 7 to 9 in the morning, 11 to 1, and 4 to 6 in the late day. The commuter would work 7:30 to 11:30 from home, drive after the rush, and log 1 late afternoon hour on days that required office presence. The manager approved both and marked the team board with coverage blocks. What counted as success was written down before the first week began. Response time in chat would stay within 2 minutes during open hours. First reply on tickets would stay within 1 hour. Error rates would not climb. Customer satisfaction would hold. No one would carry a queue alone for longer than 30 minutes. The manager added one line. No standing meeting would start before 10 a.m. or after 4 p.m. unless the entire attendee list opted in. The first week showed something people felt, but rarely measured. Focus improved when blocks were owned, and the pressure to look busy fell. The caregiver knocked out complex cases in the early calm. The commuter answered the morning surge from a quiet kitchen table. The 4 hours of core overlap kept the everyday sink intact. A single 30-minute check-in replaced 2 status meetings that had wandered. There were stumbles. Calendar invites still appeared at 8 a.m. out of habit. One shift change was missed, and the chat channel sat thin for 12 minutes. A supervisor outside the pilot asked aloud whether this would let people drift. The manager logged each miss and traced the causes. Most were not attitude. They were old routines left on repeat. Meetings were defaulting to early or late slots. Alerts for handoffs were buried under other notifications. The fixes were procedural. The team set auto messages for shifts. They moved recurring meetings to noon. They created a daily coverage post at 10:55 a.m. that simply named who was on live duty. By week 2, attention turned to the quiet cost that often hides inside flexibility. Choice can blur hours. Remote can make boundaries soft. The manager scheduled one-on-ones to ask a single question. Where does the time leak? Answers were candid. One person was stretching the day to fit errands and work with no clear edge. Another person was still answering messages at 9 p.m. because the phone was near. The manager repeated the pilot's purpose. Control of time did not mean constant reach. Availability lived inside the agreed blocks except for emergencies. The team wrote a small boundary script and pinned it. I will be offline until 11. If urgent, post in the coverage channel for the on-duty person. This was simple language. It clarified responsibility and lowered guilt. Definitions mattered. Flexible hours were defined as employee-chosen blocks that add up to a normal weekly load and fit around a shared core window. Remote meant the option to work off-site with reliable connectivity, secure devices, and a quiet space during live customer work. Hybrid meant a blend, with some days in office for paired tasks, training, or equipment work. A supportive workplace was defined as one that measures outcomes, protects health, and supplies tools and clarity, so people can meet both life and job without penalty. Naming these terms removed a layer of confusion. It also set a standard for what this pilot could claim. The coverage plan was the hinge. Without it, flexible hours would turn into guesswork. The team's plan listed primary and secondary on-duty names for each hour, plus a rotator for lunch and surprise spikes. Swaps were allowed if posted at least 1 hour ahead. The IT admin created a light dashboard that showed live duty at the top of the chat channel. The operations lead adjusted the ticket queue so complex issues did not land on the newest person late in the day. These were small changes. Together, they kept promises to customers while keeping people human. The caregiver's routine became a quiet proof point. At 7:10 a.m., after school drop-off, two tickets were cleared before the first meeting on the calendar. At 11:15 a.m., during core hours, a teammate paired in a 20-minute call and resolved a confusing warranty case. At 2:40 p.m., the caregiver signed off for the school run and posted the handoff. The secondary on-duty person clicked into place. The queue held steady. At 4:15 p.m., the caregiver closed the day with an hour of follow-ups from a kitchen table while dinner simmered. There was no hero story here. It was ordinary work, done without the extra stress that creeps in when life does not fit the old mold. The commuter's routine marked another kind of gain. The late drive cut the daily traffic time nearly in half. That time went into focused work rather than the brake lights. On in-office days, the commuter used the quiet morning block to handle the highest complexity cases. The single late afternoon hour covered a handoff and cleaned the queue. The team saw fewer last-minute escalations. The manager wrote that down in the weekly note and called it a small, repeatable win. Skepticism remained. A senior supervisor who was not in the pilot asked for assurance that accountability would not slip. The manager responded with numbers and a plan to publish weekly snapshots. The HR partner agreed to a mid-pilot review meeting on week 6. The union representative requested a simple statement that no one would be penalized for using the new options. HR provided it. Clarity is a safety tool. It was written and posted. By the end of the first month, the team had also learned what not to do. A long planning session that stretched to 2 hours broke the core hour promise and pushed into a caregiver's pickup window. The team apologized and moved the meeting to the middle of the day with a structured agenda. A burst of after-hours chat during a product incident showed the need for an incident coverage ladder distinct from the daily plan. The operations lead wrote one and trained the team in a 30-minute drill. These moves kept flexibility from becoming improvisation. The question under all of this remained open. Could a structure built on trust and measured by outcomes survive the everyday frictions of real work? The next chapter follows the numbers and the pressure points. It tracks the weeks where flexible hours improve the work and the weeks where meeting load and decision drift threaten to erase the gains. Chapter 2, The Numbers and the Knot. Week 6 began with a quiet chart review at 9 a.m., Wednesday. The manager, the HR partner, the operations lead, and the IT admin sat with a one-page summary. The pilot had reached the midpoint. The question for the room was simple. What had changed in a measurable way? The first box showed response time in chat during open hours. The average sat at 1 minute and 40 seconds. The baseline before the pilot had been just under 2 minutes. First reply on tickets held near 50 minutes. That had been the target. Error rates on resolve cases stayed flat. Customer satisfaction scores rose by a small but steady margin. Attrition was zero during the 6-week window. Sick days dipped by a small count compared to the same weeks last year. The team looked at coverage load. No single person carried the queue alone for more than 20 minutes during open hours. The coverage posts at 10:55 a.m. had been consistent. Handoffs were visible. The operations lead pointed at a second set of notes. Complex cases had moved earlier in the day for the people who worked morning blocks. Late day churn was down. The group agreed on one early finding. Flexible hours did not harm service levels in this period. In two metrics, it improved them. The manager called it a cautious win. the HR partner asked for a note that the pilot cohort was a motivated volunteer group and that broader rollout would need coaching. That reminder went into the margin. The skeptic supervisor joined the midpoint meeting and asked for a tighter view on accountability. The manager opened a second chart that tracked backlog at day end. The line trended slightly downward. The supervisor acknowledged the change. He then asked about a different risk: meeting overload. He had seen more calendar invites in the past 3 weeks and wondered if coordination time had crept up under another name. The operations lead had prepared for that question. She had counted meeting hours for the pilot team using calendar tags. The average person sat in fewer long blocks, but in more short syncs. Total meeting time had increased by about 30 minutes a week per person. The number of invitations sent had climbed as people tried to carve time inside core hours. The lead called it a coordination tax. The manager nodded. The pilot had cut status meetings early on. It had also triggered a rise in quick calls that multiplied across the week. This was the midpoint reversal. Output had improved in some areas. The cost had shifted into the calendar. People were doing better work with control of their hours. They were also accumulating small fragments of time that chipped at focus. The HR partner asked for a plan to test a fix in the next 2 weeks. The operations lead proposed three moves. First, a rule that any meeting under 15 minutes should default to an asynchronous update with a deadline. Second, a template for decision notes that lived in a shared space. Third, a weekly rhythm that grouped necessary live sessions into predictable slots. The manager wanted to test the fix in a small way first. The team picked two high-traffic processes: the daily queue stand-up and the weekly exception review. They converted both to short written updates with a simple format. What changed? What blocks progress? What needs a decision? They set a rule: live time only if a named decision could not wait. They kept one live slot at noon on Tuesdays for true blockers. The rest moved into writing. The IT admin briefed the group on technical health. Remote devices had stable connections. The company had rolled out a light mobile device management profile at the start of the pilot. It required screen lock, storage encryption, and automatic updates. Two devices had paused updates and needed manual prompts. The admin added a weekly check. He also reminded the group that home Wi-Fi setups varied. He kept a simple guide posted: use a strong password, change the router default, and avoid public networks during live customer work. The team followed the guidance. No incidents were logged. Security came with a human edge. One person had taken a call in a shared coffee shop early in the pilot and caught a reminder about privacy. The manager restated the expectation. Live customer conversations and sensitive data belonged in private spaces. The person adjusted. The HR partner wrote the moment into the pilot log as a nudge, not a penalty. Supportive did not mean careless. It meant clear expectations and fair coaching. The skeptic supervisor asked to listen in on a live hour during core time. He joined a noon session and watched the handoff practice. The on-duty person posted a brief note when the hour began. The secondary confirmed. At minute 30, a complex case entered the queue. The on-duty person asked for a second set of eyes. The commuter who often worked mornings was offline, but another teammate paired for 10 minutes. The case resolved. The supervisor noted that the tool the pair used captured decision trails. It helped a new person learn without pulling a long meeting together. Week 7 ran the meeting fix test. The daily stand-up did not meet live. The exception review stayed on paper unless a decision holder called the live slot. The first days were awkward. People wrote too little. The manager modeled a fuller note. He kept the prose short and factual. He named the decision needed. He set a reply time inside core hours. The team copied the pattern. By Friday, live time had dropped by nearly 1 hour for the group. The number of invitations sent fell. The calendar began to breathe. The manager conducted interviews with four roles for a midpoint report. The caregiver said the written updates reduced the guilt of missing a live session that landed at a tight moment. The commuter said the predictability made office days cleaner because live slots clustered at midday. A new hire said the decision notes gave context that used to be traded in quick calls. The skeptic supervisor said he still wanted guardrails so short updates did not become long threads. The team agreed to limit async chains to three replies. After that, the owner would call the noon slot. Data moved again in week 8. the team measured the time from issue discovery to decision. In the first phase of the pilot, that time had held steady. In week 8, the average nudged down. The operations lead credited the compact decision notes. A blocker in procurement moved in one day rather than three because the owner could see exactly what was needed without a meeting to gather basics. The manager kept the tone cautious. This could be noise. He wanted another week of data before claiming gain. The IT admin reported on a small spike in help desk tickets. Several people asked for better headsets, and a few requested laptop stands to improve home ergonomics. The admin saw this as a positive signal. People were investing in their setups as the pilot became normal. Facilities offered a simple stipend for home office basics. The HR partner documented it as part of a supportive workplace set of tools. The stipend had a cap and required a receipt. It was not a new perk. It was a practical support for reliable work. A different knot tightened around meeting culture in week 8. A product team outside the pilot scheduled a late afternoon review with three members of the support group. The invite landed at 4:30 p.m. The manager declined and offered the noon slot on the next available day. The product team pushed back and called the pilot restrictive. The HR partner stepped in to mediate. She restated the pilot's terms. Core hours protected predictability. Exceptions were possible with full consent. The product team moved the meeting. The log kept the exchange as a reminder that one team's flexibility should not shift costs to another group. The midpoint report took shape. It had four sections: metrics, process changes, risks, and next steps. The metrics section showed steady or slightly improved service numbers, no attrition, and a small drop in sick days. The process section documented the coverage plan, the calendar hygiene rules, and the new written decision notes. The risk section named meeting overload, cross-team friction, and boundary creep as the main hazards. The next steps section set two experiments. First, a weekly rhythm that marked Monday for planning, midweek for delivery, and Friday for cleanup inside the four-hour core window. Second, a guardrail set that limited live sessions to two per day per person during core hours, unless there was an incident. The manager presented the report at a leadership review on Thursday, week 8. The tone stayed measured. He did not claim a revolution. He described a set of small, disciplined moves supported by clear definitions and shared tools. A vice president asked whether the pilot masked overwork by spreading it across the day. The manager showed the schedule data. Most people still worked standard totals. The spread changed, but the volume did not climb. The HR partner added that the one-on-ones continued to check for time leaks and that people were encouraged to set phone silence outside blocks. The vice president asked for a formal boundary statement to include in any wider rollout. The group agreed to draft one that said availability sits inside blocks except for agreed rotations. The operations lead dug deeper into handoffs. She pulled 20 cases that had crossed between two people in a single day. She graded outcomes on speed and quality. Most did fine. Two cases stumbled when the first person did not note context. She adjusted the handoff template. It asked for three items. What happened? What remains? What you would do next if you had one more hour? That last line gave the next person a jump start. The template fit inside the chat tool. It took less than 2 minutes to complete. Training made a small entrance. A new team member joined in week 9. The manager used the pilot practices as part of onboarding. He covered core hours, coverage rotation, and the boundary script on day 1. The new hire shadowed two handoffs, wrote three decision notes, and joined the Tuesday noon slot. The experience felt structured. The person said so in a short survey. The manager marked the comment and shared it with the group as a reminder that clarity is a form of support. The skeptic supervisor remained engaged. He visited the team again and asked a practical question. What happens when demand spikes outside core hours? The operations lead showed the incident coverage ladder that had been written after the early product burst. It named on-call roles by week, kept the list short, and paid a modest stipend. The person on call made a simple commitment. If a true incident arrived, they would either step in or name the right person within 15 minutes. Otherwise, non-critical work held for core time. The latter kept rare spikes from erasing the boundary gains. Numbers at week 9 reinforced earlier trends. Customer satisfaction held its small rise. Error rates stayed flat. The meeting count remained lower than the early pilot weeks. The average person had reclaimed about 40 minutes of focus time a week. The manager did not label this as free time. He called it reallocated attention. Some of it went to better coaching. Some went to process cleanups that had been overdue. None of it showed as idle. The HR partner asked for qualitative notes to pair with the charts. She gathered short statements with permission. People said they felt treated like adults. They said the calendar felt more honest. They said the simple phrase about being offline until 11 made it easier to help at school drop-off or to run one errand without hiding it. One person said the new rhythm made them consider staying with the company for another year. The partner kept names out of the report. She preserved the dignity of private lives. One concern lingered. The pilot worked in a team with high digital flow and clear service metrics. Not every role would fit the same way. Facility staff, lab technicians, and front desk roles had physical duties. The manager and the HR partner did not ignore this. They wrote a note that flexibility could still apply through shift swaps, predictable rosters, and compressed weeks for roles that required presence. Supportive did not equal remote for all. It meant structure that respected life and the job. The final 2 weeks before the quarter mark would test the weekly rhythm and the guardrails in real time. Monday would carry planning. Midweek would protect delivery. Friday would clean and learn. Live sessions would cluster in the noon block with tight agendas. Decision notes would continue. The team would track the meeting count, the delay from issue to decision, and any slips in coverage. A quiet tension hung under the plan. Gains so far were modest and real. The meeting knot had loosened by intention. The calendar had cleared enough to let work breathe. Yet culture has a way of pulling back to old shapes. The team needed a repeatable rhythm that did not depend on one manager's vigilance. They needed guardrails that other groups would honor. Chapter 3, Rhythm, Guardrails, and the Cost of Keeping Balance. Monday, week 10, opened with a clean slate. The board showed three lanes. Plan, deliver, learn. Core hours remained 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday to Friday. The guardrails were posted at the top of the channel, where no one could miss them. Two live sessions per day per person during core hours, unless there was an incident. Async first for updates under 15 minutes. Decision notes for anything that needed a call in the noon slot. Handoffs written with what happened, what remains, and what you would do next with one more hour. The coverage ladder for true incidents sat in its own document with on-call names by week. The team treated the rhythm like a shift pattern, not a suggestion. Monday held planning in the noon window. Midweek protected delivery. Friday cleaned the queue and captured lessons. The manager opened the first Monday session with a short frame. The plan would be light, specific, and dated. People would leave with a small number of clear targets inside their chosen blocks. The HR partner listened and took notes for the rollout checklist she was drafting for later. By Tuesday, the rhythm started to show small gains. People arrived at core hours with work already scoped. Decision notes trimmed time to resolution on routine issues. The meeting cap forced tight agendas. The noon slot started on time and ended on time. One person arrived late from a dentist appointment and posted a quick note with a revised handoff. The secondary on-duty person covered the gap. The queue did not spike. The manager kept one-on-ones on the calendar and used them to test the human edge. He asked two repeating questions. Where are your blocks too tight? Where are you tempted to stretch your day? Answers stayed practical. One caregiver needed a standing grace period on Thursdays for a school activity. One analyst wanted permission to decline end-of-day invites from outside teams and route them to the noon slot the next day. The manager aligned both with the guardrails. The caregiver set a calendar note that was visible to the team. The analyst copied a short boundary script that made the decline clear and polite. The HR partner added both examples to the supportive workplace notes as patterns, not special favors. Calendar hygiene turned from a phrase into a set of habits. People used titles that named the purpose and the owner. Start and end times were strict. Recurring meetings carried a stop date. Notes lived in the same shared space. When a cross-team meeting arrived outside the noon window, the manager or the meeting owner offered the nearest noon slot and a decision note template. Pushback dropped over 2 weeks as the routine proved faster. The IT admin watched the handoff automation closely. He added a small alert that pinged the secondary on-duty person if a handoff note mentioned a blocker. He also tuned the dashboard so the top of the chat channel showed live coverage, the on-call name, and the next noon slot on a single line. He did not add more. He kept the surface simple to support attention. the operations lead walked the floor on an in-office day and asked about the rotation. Two people said the weekly rotation for lunch coverage was fair, but sometimes landed on the same person during busy season. The lead pulled data and confirmed the pattern. She spread the rotation across 4 weeks and added a swap button. Swaps were allowed as long as the partner confirmed in writing. This kept equity intact without adding meetings to negotiate. Friday arrived with a light sense of order. The queue sat lower than usual at that hour. The noon slot was reserved for learnings. The team ran a short retro with three prompts. What worked this week? What dragged? What will we change on Monday? The notes were brief. Written updates lowered guilt about missing a live session. The two-per-day live cap forced better prep. The guardrails helped decline late invites without conflict. The drag sat in a familiar place. Cross-team work that did not share the same rhythm. The change for Monday was a small one. The manager would send a one-page explainer of the team's pattern and invite partners to use the noon slot for shared work. The next week brought cost into focus. Seasonal demand rose with a product update. Morning tickets spiked. The coverage ladder kept incidents contained, but the baseline volume moved up. The flexible blocks were tested. People who worked early took on more of the first wave. The manager watched for signs of excess. He saw one person stretch into 5 short after hours checks across the week. He intervened. The person said the checks felt helpful, not heavy. The manager thanked them and pointed to the guardrails. The rule protected everyone, including the person who wanted to help. The coverage ladder existed for rare off-hours events. Routine spillover would wait for core time. The week also marked the limit of remote options for some roles. The facilities coordinator needed to be on site to handle vendors. The lab technician needed hands-on equipment. The front desk needed a presence during visitor hours. The HR partner worked with those teams to apply flexibility in other ways. Shift swaps with clear notice. Compressed weeks for those who wanted longer weekends. Predictable rosters that reduced last-minute changes. The message was precise. Supportive did not equal remote for all roles. It meant a structure that respected life while meeting the job. The manager met with leaders of those teams to write the rollout checklist, so it would not make promises the company could not keep. The checklist began with a question. What does flexibility look like in this job? It then named core hours or core presence windows. It asked for coverage plans and rotation fairness. It asked for boundary scripts and an incident ladder. It linked to the calendar hygiene habits. It ended with two reminders. People need training in the new system. People need a place to raise concerns without penalty. On Wednesday, the product team that had pushed for late meetings tried another end-of-day slot. The manager repeated the decline and pointed to the noon window. This time he attached a decision note that captured the open questions and the data needed. The product owner filled the note and realized the call could wait. The noon slot the next day moved quickly because the prep was done. The product owner sent a small thank you. The exchange went into the log as a story of friction turned into flow. The operations lead reviewed a new set of handoffs after the spike week. She found two misses. In both, the first handler did not write what they would do next with one more hour. The second person recreated work. She held a 5-minute coaching talk and showed the difference between a handoff that leans forward and one that stops. The reminder stuck. Next week, the misses did not recur. The IT admin raised a concern about privacy at home after a quick survey. A few people worked in shared spaces at times. The admin offered foldable privacy screens and suggested headsets with good isolation. The facilities team paired the stipend with a starter kit list that covered basic needs. The company reimbursed with receipts and a cap. The HR partner recorded this as a supportive workplace element that had a clear reason. Protect customers. Protect employees. Protect work. Attrition remained at zero for the pilot team through the quarter. The HR partner kept that fact in context. One quarter is not a year. People stay or go for many reasons. She also noted that two people who had been considering job searches said they would hold because the new pattern made daily life less brittle. She did not publish names. She used the quotes as a reminder that humane structure affects retention even when the charts do not shout. The quarter closed with a review on a Thursday at 1 p.m. The team's numbers held steady with the earlier gains. Response time in chat during open hours averaged 1 minute and 40 seconds. First reply on tickets sat near 50 minutes. Error rates stayed flat. customer satisfaction carried a small rise compared to the quarter before. Meeting time sat lower by about 40 minutes per person per week compared to the early pilot weeks. The delay from issue to decision ticked down, not by a large amount, but enough to notice. Leadership asked for the real costs. The manager answered clearly. Not every role can be remote. Seasonal peaks demand tight coverage and honest trade-offs. The rhythm requires coaching and attention while it sets. Cross-team friction will surface unless other teams align in part with the noon slot pattern or offer an equivalent. The guardrails must be written and enforced with care, or they will erode. The HR partner presented the rollout and audit checklist. It fit on 2 pages. Rollout checklist. Define flexibility for the role. Remote, hybrid, or presence-based. Write it plainly. Set core hours or presence windows. Post them where partners can see them. Build a coverage plan with primary, secondary, and a rotation for lunch and spikes. Cap live sessions to protect focus. Offer a noon slot or a similar shared window. Use async updates for items under 15 minutes. Use decision notes when a live call is needed. Name owner, deadline, and needed input. Train on handoffs. Require what happened, what remains, and the next step. Provide supportive tools. One-on-ones, boundary scripts, privacy gear, small stipends for basics. Create an incident ladder with on-call names and a clear stipend. Write the boundary statement. Availability lives inside blocks, except for agreed rotations. Audit checklist. Service levels. Are response time and quality within target? Meeting load. Are caps honored and noon slots used? Decision time. Has delay from issue to decision improved or held? Equity in rotation. Is coverage spread fairly? Boundary health. Are after-hours messages drifting up? Cross-team fit. Are conflicts resolved with patterns, not exceptions? Security and privacy. Are devices compliant and spaces appropriate? Human signals. Are people using time off, avoiding silent stretch, and staying in conversation? Training. Are new hires taught the rhythm in week one? Review cadence. Is there a monthly check with a short written report? The vice president asked for one more element, a short script for managers to open the change in teams that had never tried it. The manager drafted 3 paragraphs that afternoon. The tone stayed calm and practical. The script said why the company was doing this. It named what would not change. It defined success. It invited concerns early. It promised a place to report problems without penalty. HR approved the script and added it to the toolkit. The next question was scale. The pilot had shown that balance and reliability can live together in one service team with clear metrics. Could other teams adopt the pattern without lifting the manager's playbook word for word? The HR partner proposed 3 guardrail categories that would travel well. Time, coverage, and decision. Time meant core hours and the live session cap. Coverage meant primary, secondary, and fair rotation. Decision meant async first, notes when needed, and a shared live slot for blockers. Each department could write the rest to fit their work. A small manufacturing team volunteered to try the pattern in a presence-based setting. They could not move to remote. They could flex start and end times, define core overlap on the floor, and add a clear rotation for machine maintenance that often fell to the same person. In their case, the incident ladder addressed breakdowns rather than product bugs. The weekly rhythm used the first hour on Monday for line planning, midweek for production, and Friday for maintenance and learnings. The calendar hygiene rules moved to a whiteboard and a shared tablet rather than a chat tool. The spirit stayed the same. Structure that protects focus and life. Back in the support team, week 12 closed with a small dip in energy that often comes at the end of pilots. The manager named it in a short note. New patterns take effort. Habits form slowly. He thanked the team and pointed to the audit checklist as the tool that would carry this forward when the pilot label dropped. He also reminded everyone that the rhythm was there to serve the work and the people, not the other way around. If the pattern stopped helping, they would adjust it with care and data. The final meeting of the quarter ended with a practical decision. The company would extend the pattern to 2 more teams over the next quarter and would keep the pilot team on the audit cycle. The rollout would include a short training for managers and a shared place for lessons. The goal was not to chase a trend. It was to make humane structure normal and reliable. The caregiver ended that day at 3:10 p.m. with a handoff and a quiet kitchen. The commuter left the office without a late meeting on the calendar. the queue held steady. The noon slot for the next day already carried one decision note with what changed, what blocked, and what needed a call. The dashboard stayed calm. The lights were still off at 7 a.m. Work was present inside its hours. Life took the rest.